From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. President Donald Trump continues to demonize and criminalize Central American refugees seeking asylum at the border, as his administration holds thousands of families, men, women, and children in horrific conditions that many have likened to concentration camps. For those stuck on the other side of the border, endlessly waiting for the chance to apply for asylum to the U.S., children in particular remain vulnerable. Today we'll cover an effort to bring education to kids stuck on the other side of the U.S.-Mexico border. The nonprofit organization Yes We Can has outfitted a bus into a classroom and aims to help educate refugee children. Joining me to explain all of that is Carlos Marroquin. He is a board member and organizer with Yes We Can. Welcome, Carlos.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here today.
So explain this effort. I understand that it was started by an actress named Estefania Rebellon, who is based in Los Angeles, currently in Mexico, who has a very personal connection to why this is so important to her. So her organization, Yes We Can, that you're a board member of, raised the funds through a crowdfunding campaign for this bus?
Correct. Estefania, she is a former refugee. She came from Colombia, so she understands firsthand the problems and the trauma that as a child one faces when going, seeking refuge to another country, particularly traveling thousands of miles. It was her idea, her vision, when back in December, she went with a group of our activists to Tijuana to meet the caravans that were arriving at the border. And she saw the needs firsthand of what was happening out there, including the fact that many of the children, while awaiting asylum, do not have access to education. So this is where the idea came from. How can we help? How can we meet that need? You know, what can we actually do? She set up several tents. So we're holding classes in one of the villages, in one of the camps, due to the rains and the bad weather conditions, it destroyed the tents. So this is what we thought about, having something more solid, something that was mobile, and the vision started to raise money to purchase a coach bus, which later was transformed into a mobile classroom. And that's what we're at right now.
So it's a single bus right now. Are any plans to make that a fleet?
Most definitely. We saw the need not only at the border, but there is special needs within our poor communities, particularly communities of people of color. We know that there is a great need for education and providing resources for children everywhere. But right now, our focus has been at the border. Very important. And the needs that are going to be met right there are crucial. Not only what it does to the children, the immediate response of feeling that you're loved, you care for, that there are teachers out there that are going to immediately connect with these children. I mean, the results and the outcome of this is so beneficial in more than one way.
What are children going through on the other side of the U.S.-Mexico border? I know that in Tijuana in particular, because of the requirements of the U.S. government that Mexico keep asylum seekers in Mexico, there are camps that have sprung up, of course. We are horrified at the conditions of the detention camps here in the U.S., but there are essentially tent cities in Tijuana where although people aren't imprisoned, are living in quite squalid conditions, right?
Correct, and that's where we're targeting. What happens is a lot of these families, they come and seek asylum, and they start the paperwork. Pretty much they submit their application, but they're being rejected. They're not taken into any kind of, housing or anything here in the United States. They're put into either camps or they are rejected and sent back to Mexico until they await for their paperwork to be processed. So the kids that are pretty much in the other side in Mexico and their families are waiting their applications to be processed. That can take from weeks to months. You know, we don't know how long it's going to take. Meantime, the government of Mexico cannot actually provide education for them because they don't have legal status in Mexico. So they pretty come caught between here and there and nowhere, where they're not getting the education they need while waiting for their applications to be processed. That's where we come in. We are able to provide for them a program that may take several weeks to several months while they are waiting for their applications to be processed.
Does this effort also sort of provide a sense of stability for the children? I imagine that it also gives them some sense that there are people who actually care about their well-being.
Correct. I mean, the response, the immediate response that we got once the bus arrived to Mexico, it was priceless. To see these children run behind the bus and stepping into the bus for the first time, something that actually belongs to them, is for them. They feel an attachment, they feel love, they feel compassion, they feel that somebody actually cares. I mean, the benefits, like I say, are priceless, and there are many. You know, for us, it's also a form of inspiration, because pretty much it's inspiring other people to come up with ideas to step in and do whatever we can to be able to soothe the pain that these children are facing right now.
How does the bus navigate the border itself? So the bus was outfitted, it was set up here in the US, it has traveled across the border to Mexico. Does it require permission from the Mexican government or from the US government? Is this an entirely private effort?
This is a private effort. However, we have been able to work with the Mexican government since the days that we were going back in December. We established a good relationship with them. They know what we are about. They're actually welcoming us. They like the idea. Right now, we were able to obtain a piece of land where the park is, bu is where the bus is parked, and we created a village where we have a playground as well. So the government is pretty much cooperating, and they have welcomed us. And now we're also working with other organizations. Like, we have an organization that provides meals for the people. So now we're building from one thing to be able to let the community get involved in many different ways, including teachers, people that have experience teaching. You know, we are inviting teachers to donate their time, to come out on a weekend, to come on weekdays, you know, a day, 2 days, a week, and be able to be part of the learning and the teaching experience with the migrant kids.
So, what did you have to go through a process of building trust with families of these refugee children? Because, of course, the families that are fleeing tremendous violence, and the traveling is extremely dangerous. In Mexico, they I'm sure encounter dangers as well as closed doors, and in the US, if they ever do manage to come, are also facing dangers. Was it a process of to develop trust, to let to convince parents to let their children be educated?
Yes, of course. We have to be able to connect with the people. We got to be able to look them in their eye. And pretty much we connected. What we did is we connected with some of the people that were helping the migrants' families, travel through Mexico.
I
So we're
see.
in touch with some of the people that actually were assisting them. And they were able to make connections with us, including Estefania was able to actually go to Honduras and see and speak with the people on the ground, you know, firsthand, you know, and be able to connect with them. So we have built a solid connection, not only with the government officials in Mexico, but most important, with the people themselves. You know, they see us as friends, they see us as family. And especially with Stefania being a former refugee, she's able to understand their plight. She's able to understand the suffering that they are facing right now, the trauma for the children, her being a child that came at 10 years old. So pretty much she knows exactly what some of the conditions and the experiences that they're facing, and she's able to assist them.
But of course, if we believe Trump, the people who are attempting to come to the U.S. are, criminals and drug traffickers. I mean, Homeland Security Secretary, Acting Secretary Kevin McAleenan said in a rule change that was announced on Monday to make it harder for refugees to apply for asylum, he said today's action will reduce the overwhelming burdens on our domestic system caused by asylum seekers failing to seek urgent protection in the first available country, economic migrants lacking a legitimate fear of persecution, and the transnational criminal organizations, traffickers and smugglers exploiting our system for profits. Carlos, I don't know how many transnational criminal organizations, traffickers and smugglers you've encountered in the work that you're doing, but how do you respond to this characterization?
Well, actually, it's strange because we have noticed zero of those that he mentioned. We are seeing families. We are talking to individuals that moms, dads, people that actually are just seeking a better life. The fact of the matter is that we have policies in those countries in Central America that has pretty much brought this kind of conditions where people are fleeing. Yes, there may be some people that may try to take advantage of the people in the caravan, but that has always existed as well. We have people that will abuse others that are weak at a time. So these are the things that there is misinformation, and sometimes there is information that is stretched out for political convenience.
And so these new rules that I know are going to be legally challenged, but still could make their way and become part of the new rules, are yet another restriction, right, on the people's legal right to apply for asylum. And I'm wondering if all of that is very demoralizing, the news of these relentless attacks, demoralizing on the migrants who are waiting on the other side of the border.
But let's understand what has happened. It's back in December, January, there was such a pushback and the wall and everything else, but people were still coming. The conditions in Central America has not changed. As a matter of fact, they have worsened, because the president actually remove some of the aid that was given to these countries. So pretty much you have created a situation that has become worse. People are desperate. They're going to keep coming. Even though there's a couple armies, we have now the United States with troops at the border in Mexico and Guatemala. And then we have the Mexican government that also have mobilized their military, so look at the conditions that has been created here, and yet people are being criminalized for seeking asylum.
So the detention centers on the other side of the border, as you well know, the conditions are so severe that they're being likened to concentration camps, right? I mean, the government is running out of space because it's choosing to detain and keep in custody record numbers of people seeking asylum, whereas previous administrations were choosing not to do that. And so this sort of creation of a crisis has pretty severe consequences. And I'm wondering if the migrants that you've encountered are hearing of the horrific overcrowding. I mean, they're jamming hundreds and hundreds of people in spaces that are meant for dozens. There are no showers, as you've heard. There's, people don't have enough water to drink, and children are dying. Is this trickling back to people on the other side of the border?
Well, it's affecting them. This is why we have people dying. Because it's literally affecting their well-being, their lives. Lives are at stake here. When we are talking about overcrowding, we're not talking about a room with just 10 people. Yeah. You're talking about conditions that are unbelievable, are beyond unbelievable. These are you know, literally, like they say, this is putting a lot of sardines into one can. You know, in this case, these are human beings into one little room, into cages. So the conditions are grave, and this has further traumatized the people. Let's use that word. It's trauma that they're experiencing. And again, these are life and death situations for many of the people that are already weak. They have trouble thousands of miles. You know, they have, some of them have special needs. Some of them need medication. You know, these are the real conditions that they are not telling you, and that they don't want to accept, conditions that many times they have contributed in creating. So right now, I can tell you this, the Mexican government has been good in the sense that they have cooperated, they have helped. Unfortunately, they cannot provide unlimited resources to those people in camps. So the camps in the side of Mexico are being privately run, but a lot of them are run by either nonprofits or organizations that are actually doing a lot of social work. So, but the government, you know, are limited into what they can actually contribute to be able to maintain these facilities, these encampments. So much is dependent, unlike the United States, where nothing is accepted. There was a lot of people that had good intentions and being able to bring toothbrushes, toothpaste, and the U.S. government say, no, you cannot have those things here. We will not accept that. Well, in Mexico, they do accept that. And there is thousands of people out there in those camps out there.
Carlos, there were mass protests around the country on Friday under this banner, Lights for Liberty, protesting the conditions in U.S. detention centers. And then on Saturday, more mass protests in the cities where ICE raids had been planned on Sunday. It's not clear if those raids did transpire, but I'm wondering if you're heartened by what seems to be a compassionate response from a majority of American people who are really disgusted at how we are treating refugees.
Well, the fact of the matter is that most Americans do not like what they are seeing right now. This is not who America is. This is not who most good working people and good citizens of America are like. We are compassionate, we are loving, we actually care. United States is probably one of the countries that give the most in charities. We have that track record. This is who we are. We are compassionate people. Unfortunately, we do have an administration that is the opposite, that is very self-centered. And as you know, the motto is make America great, nationalism, things like this. But what I am seeing is people coming out to the streets by the record numbers. People are pretty much demanding a change. They don't want to see these encampments, you know, to continue. We are seeing people that usually don't go to the streets coming out to the streets. We need to keep those efforts. Visibility is very important, but we also need people that work in the inside. We need people to contact their representatives, both the Democrats and Republicans, because much of the crisis was pretty much created by both parties. And we need both of them to come together and find just solutions. We want just solutions. We want a fair immigration policies that are in place, not what we have seen for the past two decades. We want real change. We want real solutions. The people are ready for this. The people want this. The people need this.
Carlos, some of the new members of Congress, particularly Democrats I'm talking about, who have stuck their necks out and visited detention camps and been bold in what they see, that have been, you know, dubbed the squad. I'm talking, of course, about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib, Ayanna Pressley, and others, have faced attacks from President Trump just in the last few days that very much reflect his racist approach to immigrants and his casting of, you know, people of color as others. He's essentially told them, and sort of paraphrasing here, to go back to where they came from, even though, of course, three of the four are natural born citizens. But women like Ilhan Omar, who became a U.S. citizen at age 17, came to the U.S. as a Somali American refugee. Do you see the attacks on her and on her fellow women of color in Congress as part of the attacks on all immigrants in the U.S.?
Correct. I mean, they're going to demonize anybody that steps out against their agenda. This is what's happening. If you speak, in support of their agenda, then you're a good member of Congress. But if you oppose it and you come against these atrocities, then you're going to be labeled and you're going to be criminalized and you're going to be ridiculed and you're going to be looked as a negative element. And they're going to try to do everything they can to silence your vote. The problem that the U.S. government and particularly the Trump administration has is that this has been seen as a national, international crisis. People from all the countries are looking at this, and they're looking at the disgrace that his actions are taking and really are creating on these people that are seeking refuge. Alexandria Cortez and others are brave women. They have spoken out, and because of their actions, are taking a lot of heat, even by other members of Congress, including some from their own party. I think that we need to stand up with them, and this is why we need to call members of Congress and let them know that we support fair immigration policies and that we stand with our minority women of color that are being, trampled upon because they are speaking out. They have a voice, they need to use it, and they're doing a good thing.
Right, and in many ways, they are being seen as the very few voices among lawmakers who are actually reflecting what many Americans want. As you said, the immigration crisis is largely, where it is today, or at least before Trump came in, is largely the product of both parties working in tandem with some differences that are important. For the most part, people have not been able to rely on their representatives in Congress, even though there are some longtime stalwarts. But the new blood, if you will, that has come into Congress has brought these issues to the forefront in a really, really important way. And the next presidential election is also very high stakes in terms of who will best represent those values that may return us to getting closer to our ideals than we were under Trump. Of course, we've never met our stated ideals, but we've gone further away from them under Trump than ever before. And so I'm wondering if you have any reflections on how these issues can or should enter the political process, because it's one thing to talk about what kids are going through at the border. It's another thing to actually have real change happen. And only elected members of Congress responding to grassroots efforts can make those changes.
Well, I think it's extremely important for us to be able to push for this topic to be one of the main topics of discussion during the presidential campaign elections. I think that we need to pressure them, that we want real solutions. This is my concern, that through every political cycle, we have candidates that always, always use immigrants as a political tool. They use the immigration to talk about, what they want to do. And then the end result is that 4 years later, they still haven't done nothing, but they're coming again, promising the world, promising that they're going to bring immigration reform, and they haven't been able to achieve so. Now, I think that this time in our history, right now, I think that we are at a crossroads. I think that we have an opportunity to really push for real immigration policies. And I think that we need to hold presidential candidates accountable. We need to hold their feet to the fire. We need to ask hard questions. We need to see what their ideas are and how they are actually planning to win, not only after they get elected to their office, but actually how they are planning to implement those ideas that they may come up with. But I think that we need to have those ideas to be pretty much, at the center of the conversation right now.
So finally, Carlos, going back to what we began discussing, the School on Wheels project that your organization, Yes We Can, has put together, how can people support that effort?
Yes, it's pretty simple. You can visit us at www.yeswecan.world, and you will find in there the different things that we are doing. You're going to be able to navigate through the page. If you like to volunteer, if you like to donate, you can do so through the website. We are looking for volunteers for teachers. If you want to come and visit the encampments during the week, on weekends, we ask you to come and join us to see it for yourself, the great need that is taking place right now and how we are affecting those lives through the people that are more desperately at need right now.
That's yeswecan.world, and we'll link to that from our website as well. Thank you so much, Carlos. Good luck to you.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
My guest has been Carlos Marroquin, board member and organizer with Yes We Can. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingup@sonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.